On this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
I can't tell you what the one key is, but we could save the planet 1 millimeter of topsoil at a time. You can't be a fan of herbs, organic foods, etc., and not try to understand how to play a role in raising awareness. I guess we think someone else is going to do it, or, you know, hey, I'll just always buy my food at the grocery store. I think one thing COVID taught us is that you're not guaranteed anything unless you've got it in your proximity.
Health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. Just two bottles I keep them in my pantry. Throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. All right, folks. So a few months ago, I was in Tennessee. Now I was having dinner with some friends, and between bites of some kind of wonderful ice cream we were having. Jordan, you remember that stuff? It was like MCT and collagen and probiotics. Our buddy Andy's ice cream was fantastic. So my podcast guest today, Jordan Rubin, and I were chatting over both ice cream and then also some crazy Tropo del, some Colombian recipe in which you take a giant beef loin and wrap it in a towel, and prior to that, coat it in a thick layer of salt. And I believe in this case, Paul, I think his name was, the chef down there, also drenched it in wine and olive oil. And then you just kind of like toss it on a fire. And
underground, a fire in Andy's backyard. It was hazardous, I'm sure. And
it was good, though.
It was great. Oh, I loved it.
Melts in your mouth. Good. I tried to replicate that exact recipe when I got home. I got a big old loin from Bel Campo, and I put a bunch of coarse salt on it and some other seasonings, and then drenched it in wine and olive oil and wrapped in a towel. And this was about 2 months ago. Started a big fire in our fireplace in the living room.
That's what I was going to say, the same thing, a forest fire if it was outside.
Toss it in there. And it kind of sort of worked. Like it turned into this massive explosion of flame, and I was worried that I just burnt the entire piece of meat to a crisp. But once I took it out and carved it out of that giant layer of salt, it actually wasn't half bad. My kids were kind of impressed that I managed to not burn the house down and feed them simultaneously with a kind of cool meal.
Flambé.
So, yeah.
As an entree.
Flambé. But we weren't eating yak, which I actually want to talk with you about on today's show. But real quick, before we get into yaks and water buffalo and beyond, basically, while Jordan and I were eating dinner, he was just fascinated with me with all these stories of crazy animals and superfoods that he's now growing on his farm, which he'll fill you in on because his farm is just fantastic, all in this very sustainable and regenerative way that can feed a lot of people with really low acreage requirements. And so I knew I wanted to get him on the podcast to talk about his farm. And if you aren't familiar with Jordan, I mean, he's Jordan, not to make you sound old, but you are one of the OGs in the whole like health and diet and supplements industry. As a matter of fact, I remember when my great uncle Vito down in Florida, he had cancer, and this must have been when I was 13 or 14 years old, and he had a library of books he was reading at the time, and your book was one of them. I forget the name of it, but I think it was one of your early like food to heal the body. Well, what was the name of one of your
patient
first books?
Patient Heal Thyself, maybe?
I think it was Patient Heal
Baker's
Thyself.
Diet.
Yeah.
Yes,
and now,
that was my first.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember thumbing through that. Like even then I had a keen interest in fitness and nutrition and had no clue who you were at the time, but I thought it was an interesting book. I didn't steal it from my uncle, but made a mental note. And then you and I have crossed paths multiple times. You know, we have a mutual friend, Josh Axe, and I've had him on the podcast to talk about your guys' company, Ancient Nutrition. I've read most of your books, although I haven't yet read The Maker's Diet, which looks just fascinating. You know, for me being a Christian who also cares about nutrition, that book is on my radar. And then you also have another book called about fasting, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. My latest book is called Essential Fasting. So it's really a guide to finding a fasting protocol that works for you. So yeah, it's great. Who would have thought that sometimes the best diet is no diet at all?
I know. And Essential Fasting is a better title than Don't Eat. So anyways, Jordan he's an entrepreneur, he's an author, he's a lecturer. He's been doing this for decades. He's the founder of Garden of Life, which you've probably seen at just about any grocery store with a health food section on the face of the planet. And he has formulated hundreds of dietary supplements and functional foods and beverages. He really thinks outside the box, which is what I appreciate about him. And, he also has, like I mentioned, a keen interest in farming. And especially organic, regenerative, permaculture, and all things that go into taking care of God's good planet while also harvesting really good stuff from it. So anyways, Jordan, there are so many places that we could jump in, but in the interest of time, I want to tackle what really intrigued me as we were having dinner, when you told me that you thought cows were more or less kind of a stupid idea and that you'd stumbled across better ways to kind of raise animals, particularly in the form of things like yaks and water buffalo. And you're wearing a Team Yak t-shirt right now.
Oh, good. I thought you didn't see it.
I can see it. I can see your shirt. Like I mentioned before we started, I don't know if you're wearing pants, but I can at least appreciate your Team Yak t-shirt.
You know what I should do, Ben, is wear a Team Yak t-shirt and wear pants made out of yak hair. You know, like that would be, I would yak it up.
Go I will yak. Not make any woolly yak underwear jokes right now.
Well, that's where they get it from.
All right. So go ahead. Why yaks? Why water buffalo? What's going on there?
You know, I think most of what I do has a very complicated chain of events. But at the end of the day, my passions as I sit here right now, number one, I want to feed the world, and I want to do it in a way that is healthful, sustainable, and provides significant overabundance of resources, et cetera. And number two, I want to end certain diseases. So no one will accuse me – when I say certain, all. So no one will accuse me of having not having lofty goals. But I think the first thing we can do if we want to change the world is change ourselves, our family, and then – I like now the idea of doing certain things on a small scale. I know that's laughable for anyone who knows me, because for me, if more is more, even more is even more. That's just the way I roll. But in this case, I've really had, I'll call it revelation on how to transform land, really the resources that we've been given that is all that matters. And we were so tied up in technology, and now there's even cryptocurrency. So we have gone so far from the growing and raising of food, the bartering system. You trade something of legitimate value for someone else's something of legitimate value. Today, it's literally the emperor's new clothes all around us. But that being said, I always want to find ways to do things better and do things right. And I started to learn about livestock. This was back in the early 2000s, I was really passionate about consuming grass-fed, organic, local foods. But then I wanted to know how to create those foods. And then when I started looking at, well, if this kind of dairy is better, then what's even better than that? And I think what caught your attention is I said, listen, if it were up to me, some of my small goals would be to replace cattle with water buffalo. And then just to give you context, there's 97 million cows in America and 6,000 water buffalo. So it's a little bit of a disparity. And then I said, I'd love to replace chicken eggs or hen eggs with duck eggs. Now, this is pretty simple because water buffalo produces red meat and milk that's amazing. And duck eggs are like chicken eggs, only better. So then the question is, why do we have such a proliferation of cows or cattle and chicken eggs, when I can give you 10 reasons why the water buffalo is a healthier animal, easier to raise, better on the environment, and the meat is healthier, the dairy's healthy. Same with duck eggs and duck meat, frankly. So
do it. Give us the reasons. We'll fill people in on yaks versus cows and ducks versus chickens.
Sure. And the yak is obviously an exciting animal as well. The challenges with yak is that they have real challenges with heat. Even anything above, I'll call it 70 degrees, can cause heat stress because yak, as we alluded to, have an extremely hairy coat. So I started out looking into yak, and I own probably 50 head of yak. But then I latched onto water buffalo, and water buffalo are extremely amazing.
Wait, you couldn't just shave your yaks?
You don't shave them, actually. You comb them out, and that's where you get the fur. So it's even more sustainable than that, but it's they struggle so much in the heat, and our farms are in Missouri and Tennessee, and we love them, and we had actually a really good year for the yak, but it is they're not going to be able to proliferate across the U.S., whereas water buffalo, from the northeast to the southeast to the Pac Northwest, they're good to go. And water buffalo, just give you a couple of tidbits. Their meat is higher in protein, higher in iron, higher in B12, higher in zinc, higher in creatine, glutamine, you name it. The fat is lower. Now, I'm a fathead. I love fat. But just for those of you who are interested, the fat in water buffalo meat is a lot lower. The taste is excellent, a little bit like a wild game, but fabulous. The milk is a game changer. And I'm going to introduce an idea to you, Ben, because I know you love outside the box thinking. So it may actually help from a climate perspective, because bald yak might be even better for a from a heat tolerance perspective. We don't dehorn our animals, nor do we castrate. We do things very, very, I'll call it natural. Mm-hmm. So water buffalo milk is a game changer. And it has these three qualities that I'm convinced are the things you should look for in milk. Number one, naturally homogenized. This is in no particular order, but cow's milk dairy, if it's non-homogenized, homogenization is a terrible process that causes damaging enzymes and makes the milk nice and smooth, no cream top. But cow's milk separates. Yak milk, buffalo milk, camel milk, sheep milk, and goat milk, they're all naturally homogenized. There is something there, Ben. I don't know exactly what, but fat, I'll call it globules or molecules, are in solution. So there's something scientifically, there's not a lot of information on why that's better, but that's one. Number two, you want dairy to be free of A1 beta casein, which has been called the devil in the milk.
Mm-hmm.
Cow's milk, most of the cow's milk in the US and in Europe have A1 beta casein. The original cows or cattle that came from India, Africa, Middle East, they do not. So A1 beta casein is foreign to the human body. Mother's milk is only A2 beta casein. So while cows predominantly have A1, certainly most species in the US, the same animals I mentioned, water buffalo, sheep, goat, yak, as well as camel, they're all free of beta casein A1. And number three, you'll love this, and we need to find out why this is important. These dairy cattle have some way to metabolize carotenoids so that the dairy is all white. So water buffalo milk, they could be on an entirely pastured diet, which ours would be, and the milk is white as snow. And you know, when it comes to cow's milk, you're going to see on a pasture-raised farm, the cow's milk will be yellow, and if it's frozen, even orange. There's something powerful about those pre-metabolized carotenoids, because they're getting all the carotenoids, they're just processing them in a more usable form. And I'm not even mentioning the fact, check this out, water buffalo milk, if you compare it to cow's milk, has 110% more magnesium. Now, you might think, well, magnesium you can get in a lot of places. Well, first of all, no, you can't. Second of all, animal source magnesium, game changer. Again, do I have scientific data? No, because nobody's done it. But would you rather consume dairy with 110% more magnesium? Absolutely, to go with the calcium, phosphorus, et cetera. And I did some data on the differences between water buffalo milk and cow's milk, and almost every nutrient in water buffalo milk is higher. And here's the biggest reason I love water buffalo milk. It has twice the amount of fat. So twice the amount of short chain, medium chain fatty acids, all the fats, twice the amount, naturally homogenized. Unbelievable.
Well, this is important. I want to slow down for just a second, just to make sure we clarify a few things for people who might not understand the importance of what you're saying. So when it comes to this homogenization, and I've discussed this on previous podcasts, the ability of homogenization, not the natural form of homogenization that you're finding in the water buffalo milk, but mechanical homogenization of, say, cow's milk, that affects the structure of the proteins in raw milk. You know, the fat molecules become smaller. They can become like capsules for substances that can bypass digestion, like proteins, for example, can wind up getting absorbed in the bloodstream, resulting in some immune reactions to homogenized milk. You know, pasteurization is a whole different issue when it comes to killing off a lot of beneficial bacteria, but a lot of people who struggle with milk struggle with an immune reaction to milk due to the homogenization process. And then when you get to the A2 versus A1 consideration, similar thing. I discovered this way back in the day when I started giving my kids goat's milk instead of cow's milk. And the exercise-induced asthma one of my sons was experiencing during soccer went away, like, overnight as we cleaned up his diet, not by eliminating dairy, but by switching him to a less problematic form of dairy that doesn't have that potential cause of not only stomach pain and other GI symptoms, but also immune system reactions from that beta casein protein, that A1 beta casein protein, which is why even a lot of, you know, I tell people if you're going to buy a good cheese, get it from like a good, you know, artisanal European hard source, just because you tend to get more of like an A2 cheese. Although, you know, some cows, I think, what is it, the Guernsey cow that's bred now for A2?
A Guernsey, I believe, always has had over 90% predominance of A2. That's the only Bos Taurus type of cattle in the world that is predominantly A2. Everything else is either 50% A1, or almost, in the case of Holstein, you know, the Chick-fil-A black and white cows, they're almost entirely A1.
Yeah. And there is that great book you mentioned, The Devil is in the Milk. And then I think it's A2milk.com, where you can find some milk and cheese sources that are also A2. Although we'll jump back on the water buffalo bandwagon here in a little bit. And then the bioavailability of carotenoids, a lot of people don't realize how variable that is, and how things like, again, mechanical homogenization or heat treatment can actually affect carotenoid bioavailability, in some cases increasing, in some cases decreasing. But the fact is there's processing in a lot of foods that will decrease carotenoid availability. And a lot of people think they're getting a lot of these, you know, vitamin A or other carotenoid forms, and they're not. And so that's really interesting. I didn't know that about the milk either. So, you know, I just wanted to jump in there and clarify for people, these are matters that wind up stacking and having a profound influence on the presence of gut issues, immune issues, or the lack of them, depending on the source of the milk that you're drinking. And before I interrupted, Jordan, you were about to explain why duck eggs versus chicken eggs.
Yeah, and one thing I will say about duck eggs, this is really important, Ben, because you and I have already had a text snafu due to autocorrect. And so when you're really quickly typing for someone to buy you duck eggs, or, hey, did you get me the duck eggs? You need to be a little careful and wait to send the message, because people can be like, whoa, I'll get your eggs. Jeez. So anyway, that's just an aside. I'm learning that because I'm a fast texter.
There are other autocorrect words that end in UCK.
Yeah, it's and for someone who never uses that word, it's really out of character. So on the duck egg side, first of all, chefs around the world will tell you that duck eggs are more delicious, and they really are. One thing that's interesting, and again, Ben, I'm going to give you some verifiable data and then some, I'll say, subjective information that I believe means something. But if you crack a duck egg, the albumin, the white, is much, much more viscous. It's much thicker. So when I go from a duck egg to a chicken egg, the chicken egg literally seems like there's water inside after cracking duck eggs. But the real key, a duck egg has a greater proportion of yolk to white. And I never bought into the, you know, get rid of the yolk, eat egg white crap, because that's not a real food. But so many people did. The yolk is absolutely amazing. And just a couple of points for duck eggs versus chicken eggs. Duck eggs contain 8 times more B12. And I adjusted this for weight. I was looking at apples to apples, because a duck egg, the ones that we produce, they're about 60 grams of weight. And a chicken egg is about 50. So it's not really that much larger, but 8 times the B12, and this is a form of B12 that is highly bioavailable. I do a lot of raw eggs. My family, I make smoothies with raw eggs, etc. And the other, and this is something that most people won't appreciate, there is 3 times more cholesterol in a duck egg than a chicken egg, which means from a brain perspective, phospholipids will follow, you know, the phosphatidylcholine and serine, etc. But you're literally producing 3 times the androgenic, or in case of a female, if you need certain hormones like progesterone, et cetera, you're getting that because cholesterol is a building block. And I love that. So you're literally gram per gram of egg, you're getting 3 times the cholesterol. And by the way, Ben, I've done research dating back to the early days of bodybuilding and why raw eggs were consumed. Why did Rocky swallow them in the first Rocky movie? There's actually trace amounts of testosterone in egg yolk, and it follows cholesterol.
You, by the way, you just gave a bunch of like UFC fighters and, you know, Ironman triathletes, you know, and cyclists and all these people who are in USADA and WADA doping tested sports, a really great excuse. They're just going to tell their testers now that they had duck eggs for dinner the night before.
Yeah. They'll just be like, hey, it wasn't the testosterone. It was the duck and eggs. But yes. Right. So check this out. I was wondering where this all came from, because I've been studying sort of the formation of the bodybuilding diet, or what you would call sort of a nitrogen balanced diet, positive nitrogen. And there was a study done, I think, in the 70s, where burn victims, the severe second and third degree burn victims, consumed 35 raw eggs a day, and they compared it with a low dose of Dianabol, like the lowest dose to keep your body in that positive nitrogen balance. When you're burned, your protein is literally being evaporated. And they found that 35 eggs a day, that's a lot of eggs, had the same effect on the positive nitrogen balance in the body as a low dose of Dianabol, which is a synthetic testosterone. And some of the early bodybuilding diets that were followed by Vince Gironda and one of the first sort of nutritionists to deal with protein powder, Rio H. Blair, they got their diet advice with all of these raw eggs from this study. So really cool stuff when you start to think about how important it is to change the poultry that you're consuming eggs from. Same egg size, pretty much. You've got three times the cholesterol, eight times the B12. And think about that for an entire year if you eat a lot of eggs. Pretty amazing.
Now you, when you're talking about water buffalo and you're talking about ducks, you know, versus say the more popular cow or chicken, I know that one of the first things people are thinking, because this is what I think, is, well, that sounds great if you're Jordan Rubin and have some, you know, fringe farm where you're experimenting with this stuff, but how can these type of foods be made available to the masses, particularly people who don't have a farm?
It's a great question. So if you look at water buffalo, I mentioned there's 6,000 in America. Well, there's, I believe, 300 million in the world. So if you look at India, water buffalo are doing the work in the rice paddies, and I'll explain why that's important. China, water buffalo are all over, especially places like Mongolia. Italy, it is not legal to call mozzarella mozzarella, particularly buffalo mozzarella, unless it comes from water buffalo. So there is a greater prevalence of these animals around the world. And by the way, in addition to producing healthier meat and milk, they can live between 20 and 25 years in a healthy domestic setting, having a healthy calf probably every year, depending on how you raise them. And they have barely any foot problems, which is one of the major reasons why veterinary medicines and livestock are used. And they're terrible. They get in our water and our food supply. They have very little eye problems. You don't need to pull calves. They calve very easily and very well. They live in almost every environment, unless in certain instances they can have challenges from a health perspective if it's really cold and wet. But all in all, they're amazing. And so, for example, you say, how do you get water buffalo products? Well, if you go to certain health food stores, you will find, I think there's a brand of water buffalo soft cheese out of South America called Buff. It's B-U-F with an accent mark on the U. Maybe Buff makes you buff. Hmm. So that's really yummy. And then there have been over the years water buffalo yogurts. And, you know, there are more and more farms right now, Ben, until we get some of our water buffalo over here in Tennessee. I've been ordering water buffalo milk from an Amish farm in Pennsylvania. So it's few and far between. I'm not going to give the name because then there'll be none left for me. But
yeah.
in the meantime, and duck eggs. So certain cultures consume duck eggs often, including folks from Korea. And Ben, I don't know if you've ever had a century egg or a preserved egg. Have you ever had one of those?
Yeah, I had one in, it was either Thailand or Japan. Incredibly flavorful. Like it was at some big fancy dinner I was at, and they brought it out as one of the dishes. And I remember having one. It was about 5 or 6 years ago.
And it's black. I mean, yeah. My family freaked out. I bought some. We went to an Asian market and we brought some. The outside looks like kind of black, very thick jelly or rubber, and the inside, the yolk is black. And I videoed it, and I actually also have some dried locusts from Israel. That's a whole different story. But I ate a preserved or century duck egg with a locust on top of it. And, you know, I felt like I was pretty cool, you know, a little bit of fear factor there. But so Korean, Asian, and even local markets, if you will go, they will have duck eggs, particularly in the spring, because that market is very strong. I think I looked up recently in certain areas of Asia, they consume some ridiculous number of preserved duck eggs a year. They're supposed to really impart great physical and other benefits. So duck eggs are much more available today than water buffalo dairy. But here's the deal, Ben, you know how this goes. If there's demand, there will be supply. But how do you know what to ask for unless you sort of stumble onto some of this? And to me, I didn't know anything about water buffalo or yak or that much about ducks, but these animals are easier to keep. They're healthier. And on the in the case of ducks, the reason we brought them to our farm, Ben, initially, they are great alternatives to pesticides. They actually gobble up grasshoppers, locusts, aphids. We saw it's amazing. They can consume a significant amount of locusts in a sort of 3-foot radius. I think when there was a big locust swarm coming from Africa to China and they released 100,000 duck army to go eat those critters, and then they produce super healthy eggs as a result.
You know, I grew up in Lewiston, Idaho, and about every 3 to 4 years, like clockwork, we would have these giant locust infestations at our property. And we wound up introducing praying mantises. We got tons of chickens. We wound up like paying neighborhood kids literally like a penny a locust to trap and catch these things. My brothers and I would learned how to eat them from a local like army survival guy. So we would, you know, walk around just like picking them up, ripping their legs off and eating locusts. And we had no clue about ducks. What wound up making the biggest impact actually was the introduction of a large amount of praying mantises, which kind of had a catch-22 effect, because we wound up getting attacked by praying mantises instead of locusts after a while. But I wish we'd have known about ducks back then. Now, a couple of subtle nuanced questions here. If you decided you wanted to raise ducks, because many people are doing like backyard chicken coops right now and doing chickens, do you need water if you're going to raise ducks? Do you need a body of water?
It's a great question. So we have right here where I'm sitting, and I can look out the window. I'm on our farm in Tennessee. So we have ducks in our greenhouses, and we have ducks by a pond. The answer is they love water. In fact, they sleep in the middle of a body of water if they can to avoid predators, which is really cool. But our ducks in our greenhouse have water to drink, and they have, you know, the insects to eat, and we do feed them some organic feed. But no, the answer is no. You don't need a, quote, body of water. Although if you look online at some of the hobby farm stores, they'll often recommend a little like duck swimming pool, like a baby kid swimming pool. But you absolutely don't need water or a body of water for either water buffalo or duck. But if you have one, they will spend lots of time in it in the warmer climates.
Interesting. And could ducks coexist with chickens, do you think?
They do coexist. They definitely hang out on their own, but we have chickens here. We have ducks. We have all kinds of livestock, and they can coexist. We've not had them in the same, I'll call it chicken house or duck house or duck or chicken tractor. But I know that, as the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together, but they can be on the same property, if you know what I mean. We have guinea fowl here too, and they're great for eating many different types of insects, including fleas and ticks, which is amazing if you have dogs and cats, because you need that type of protection, or humans that hate ticks.
That's really good to know, because I live on about 10 acres in the forest out here, and I'm always keeping my finger on the pulse of ways to naturally control the tick population, even though we don't have to worry too much about Lyme out here on the West Coast. It's something that just I like to not have to, you know, brush my hands through my children's hair at night and find ticks.
Yes.
So guinea fowl is another one that you like.
Yes, and they're really difficult to raise because they're super fast. They perch high and they fly. So you really want to clip a wing if you have guinea fowl. But they're the chickens of Africa. They look really interesting, but they are great birds for pest control, good eating, and their eggs are really great if you can find them, meaning even on the property, they hide them pretty well.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder Put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
Another question about the milk factor and animals for milk. Camel's milk for a while was quite popular. There was a farm, I believe they were based out of California, called Desert Farms Camel Milk, and they would send them up. My kids actually loved them. I haven't drank it in a while, but again, very bioavailable. Seemed like a good A2 source of dairy with some of the same advantages of use as you've outlined for something like water buffalo. Why not camels?
I think the issue with camels has really more to do with the amount of milk they produce, the difficulty in keeping them, and then they don't have a short gestation either. So I think if I remember correctly, you're going to get at best 2 births in 3 years. That being said, oddly enough, there is, I would say, a nice body of research on camel milk for pervasive developmental disorders such as autism. There's been a study on inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's and colitis with camel milk. It's absolutely amazing that there's research on a product that comes from an animal, dairy, which has been so vilified over the last, I'll call it even decades. So I think if you can get camel milk, it's excellent. It's interesting, Ben, because out of all the dairy that I mentioned, sheep has much more butterfat than cow's milk. Water buffalo does. Same with yak. But when it comes to camel milk, it's much thinner and has less fat, but it is loaded with naturally occurring immunoglobulins and lactoferrin. Those are compounds that either stimulate the immune system, or in the case of lactoferrin, it sequesters iron to keep it away from microbes growing. So I think the idea and the mechanism of action on camel milk is that it really improves the gut biome. So yeah, camel milk, if you can get it, it's really rare and expensive, but it has some really great properties as well.
Okay, got it. Now, you know, you told me that on this Tennessee farm that you're podcasting near Nashville, somewhat near Nashville, today from, you have this ancient nutrition center for regenerative agriculture and sustainability, which is kind of like your research hub where you're establishing a food forest, which I'd love to hear a little bit more about. But you mentioned that you're planting like a million different superfood bearing perennial plants over the next several years and calling them America's forgotten superfoods, like all these different species that are actually indigenous to your region. Now, obviously, we don't have time on this show to talk about 100 different species, but I'm curious if there are any that you think are particularly intriguing, if you want to kind of open the kimono on what you guys are doing down there. Can you share with me the strategy here behind, and this is kind of a jam-packed question, we have time, the strategy behind a food forest and what that is, why the perennial plants, and perhaps a couple examples of some of these forgotten superfoods that you're planting?
I'd love to. It's one of my favorite topics. So I think the first step, and I am not trying to talk down to anyone, because we were an agrarian society. And when I grew up, I literally thought food came from Publix and the health food store. I grew up in a health conscious family. I never grew anything. I never saw anyone grow anything. It was all concrete jungle for me, sort of in the suburbs. So, I mean, I didn't know the difference between a perennial and an annual. And simply put, a perennial is a tree, bush, shrub, hedge. You plant it once and it lives for, call it, five to hundreds of years. Whereas an annual, each year you have to replant it from seed or from some type of propagated cutting, if you will. So there's a huge difference for the environment and our bodies. When you consume an annual plant, and that's kale, that's carrots, that's broccoli, these are good foods for you, don't get me wrong. They're really disruptive in the environment, even if they're organic, because you're constantly disturbing topsoil, releasing carbon, and all the things that come with that. A perennial is something you plant once, and if it's a certain plant, your great-grandchildren can eat the fruit of it. I mean, Ben, what could get better than that? Seriously, you plant a tree and it's a legacy. And so I didn't appreciate this growing up. I didn't understand it in my 20s and 30s, but I probably would say that my appreciation for perennial plants is as great as anyone could appreciate anything on this earth. And that being said, I believe that perennial plants are the answer to our environmental and physical health issues. And I can easily point back to paradise, because Adam and Eve, we call it the Garden of Eden. What it really was a perennial food forest. They ate from the vines and from the trees. Every year it took less work and produced more fruit. And when the fall of man came, part of the ramifications was annual agriculture. The Bible says in Genesis, God's talking to Adam, cursed will be the ground. You will work it, it'll be hard, thorns and thistles will come from it, and by the sweat of your brow you'll obtain your food. Work, carbon release.
Annual tilling of the soil, I wouldn't say it's abusive to the soil, but it's harder on the soil when it has to be tilled in that way, because it limits the ability to be able to sequester carbon versus like a perennial crop, especially a perennial crop worked in with, you know, this whole concept of a food forest where the perennial crop is growing under like a tree cover. And then typically, from what I understand of a food forest, you've then got your, you know, kind of like on the lower level underneath your perennial shrubs, you know, some different things like, say, like berries or something like that, different shrubs that I think might be considered annual. And then you can even have like edible fungi or medicinal mushrooms, et cetera, underneath that layer.
Yes. And really, that's what a perennial food forest is. They're all over the world naturally, but I'm looking out my window and I see 50-foot-tall oak trees and pines, that's a little bit harder to harvest, but we're actually creating the best way to describe it. And we're going to have video footage. We were out here looking today kind of at the before, because we're starting to plant on April 12th. We're really excited about that. We're looking at 25,000. We call it a million member regenerative food forest, because they're not really all trees. Some are shrubs, some are bushes. We're going to plant 1 million of them, 25,000 per acre, in a way that is easy to harvest and sequesters the most carbon. So it's the most environmentally beneficial, and it also has the greatest ability to produce, I'll call it biomass, which would be leaves and bark and fruit. Because the Native Americans, we're talking about natives here in Tennessee, it's Native American, I'll call it health or medicine. And while I love blueberries and raspberries and blackberries and all of the normal fruits, bananas and things that don't grow here, there are amazing medicinal plants that do grow here. One you've heard of, Ben, and many have, Aronia or chokeberry, has become, I would say, a little bit popular in terms of its antioxidant potential. But there's others like hackberry or pawpaw. And in fact, we were planting this morning, just starting to put some of our test plants in the ground, and I planted some pawpaw and then some persimmon. Those are two fruits that most people have never consumed. Not only are the fruits amazing, the leaves of the plants are amazing, and they are indigenous to most of Middle America. And Ben, I've never had a pawpaw. Like, I was talking to Todd, our farm manager, and I said, Todd, we need to order a pawpaw because I've just never had one. Someone decided not to domesticate it and study it the same way they did a raspberry. So this is this amazing fruit that's got a history in Native American health.
Yeah, it kind of looks a little bit like a mango, right?
Yeah, it's actually, if you've ever, you've probably heard of graviola leaf, right? It's kind of a alternative cancer remedy if you look online. Well, graviola is soursop, which mm-hmm. grows in South America and South yeah. Florida, the tropics. It's a relative of, it's the Midwestern version of that. So it's really, it's the largest land fruit in America, which is amazing. And I've never had one, and we're growing them. We're planting 15,000, and I couldn't be more excited.
Wow.
It's not to be confused with the pawpaw that Baloo the bear talks about in the Jungle Book. That mm-hmm. is a papaya. So in India, they call pawpaw papaya, which, by the way, we grow a papaya here indoors, and it's one of the most hardy, fast-growing plants. Ben, you're not going to believe this, but we planted papaya from seed that I ate papaya last year. I bought it at the health food store, planted seeds, and we're already producing fruit less than a year later. It just blows my mind, from a little seed that I, from which the fruit I ate.
I didn't think I would think about that song during this podcast, The Bear Necessities.
I know it by heart. Don't make me quote it. I
the
did
big
yesterday.
Paw.
I'm very proud of it. Or a prickly pear. And we grow that too.
Wow. Interesting. Now, as you're growing these foods and you have the animals as well, you know, I've interviewed Joel Saladin in the past, who kind of rotates his chickens to different areas of the property, which we tried to do for a while, but it's been so hard. Now we just let them roam free, and then they're in the coop at night. But, you know, this whole concept of, I guess it would be like this mixed species, all these different animals that you have there, combined with rotational grazing, are you doing like kind of like a mixed species rotational grazing type of system, similar to what a guy like Joel Saladin is doing?
Yes, it's a little bit different, and Joel is absolutely a pioneer in this, and the guy's amazing. But we do something a little differently. We've tried to experiment where at one point I had thousands of animals in a rotation all together. I'm talking about yak, water buffalo, sheep, goats, cows, chickens, and unfortunately not all the animals play nice with each other. And so what we often do is more of a leader follower, and I think that's more similar to what Joel will do, where certain livestock go first, then some follow, then the chickens come because they eat the grubs that are in the manure. So that is more akin to what we do. For example, I was just in some of our greenhouses, and we had obviously brought sheep through there because I see sheep manure all the way through, and I'm excited because we're actually going to plant in ground in those greenhouses. But the grazing part of livestock is absolutely critical to this plan of mine that could essentially feed the planet. You can basically, with enough time and some water, take any piece of land from desert to rock and grow pasture, which eventually creates topsoil And eventually, in cycles of 7-year periods, you can plant trees. So that's the idea. Animals must be a part of it. I'm an omnivore, as you know. We just described a steak that we ate earlier in the program. But I do believe that we could get back to a Garden of Eden type eating plan that includes primarily nuts and fruits and perennial vegetables. But livestock is a must as a part of that, because they're required, in my mind, to bring the soil microbes and organic matter where it needs to be. So it's an entire system, and it's all in 7-year cycles, 6 years on, 1 year off, very biblical. And it's something that I sort of drew up years ago because I asked the question, how do you feed the planet? How can you feed the planet? Because there's arguments. The folks that follow a plant-based diet say it's all soybeans, and those that follow an omnivorous diet believe that that bison will save the planet. The truth is it's somewhere in the middle, but there is absolutely a formula to do it. And I don't know for the life of me, Ben, why people are not attempting it on a larger scale. So that leaves us to do it in a small scale and try to tell the world on your podcast and others.
So you guys had pretty bad soil. I know you had bad soil up in Missouri in your original farm, because that's like the Ozarks, where, from what I understand, it's horrible, rocky soil and difficult to grow in. But when you introduce this kind of food forest, from what I understand, is as you do this, you're actually creating soil that's got more and more, like a higher and higher percentage of organic matter over time. So you're essentially building the topsoil as you go with this kind of food forest program. So you can essentially reinvent the soil wherever you're wanting to create a farm or a growing system.
Absolutely. And people have talked about oil being black gold. I promise you, black gold is topsoil. It's organic matter. We have lost, I can't even count the number, but it's something ridiculous, like trillions and trillions of tons of topsoil, organic matter, that are going into our rivers and streams and being eroded due to annual agriculture with crops, due to confined animal feeding operations. Our most valuable asset on the planet is topsoil. As our topsoil goes, our oxygen level goes. All of the things that people talk about with global warming and climate, I can't tell you what the one key is, but we could save the planet 1 millimeter of topsoil at a time. And Ben, for some people, it's as simple as composting your food waste. I mean, that's how you create soil. And I remember in California, we lived there for a brief time. I would take food waste. I had a very tiny yard, but I couldn't throw the stuff away. So I would take some of it and put it in a compost bin, but it would create flies and maggots and stink. And then I took my Vitamix or Blendtec at the time, and I'd start blending food waste. Ben, you'll appreciate this. Little water, some food waste. My 2-year-old at the time, who saw me constantly making smoothies, she looked up after I blended eggshells and banana peel. She says, "Dad, are you going to make me drink that?" It's like, "No, that's for the ground outside." But I would literally take a blended food waste and put it on this little backyard that we had just to create more organic matter. I mean, it's not difficult for somebody to make a difference when it comes to climate. But the truth is, we're so tied to our convenience and our technology. I guess we think someone else is going to do it, or, you know, hey, I'll just always buy my food at the grocery store. I think one thing COVID taught us is that you're not guaranteed anything unless you've got it in your proximity. And so I do think people need to start focusing on growing something, raising something. And I can tell you, hobby farming is growing because we've had the hardest time getting seeds and seedlings this year than ever before. So the word's getting out, but I think it could be accelerated if we really want to see change happen.
And I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask anyways. What if you don't have a yard? I mean, what if you're literally like, you know, condo, you got a patio? I mean, have you ever looked into any of these like vertical gardening systems or anything like that?
Absolutely. When I was in South Florida, we didn't have a yard where you could really grow anything that was worthwhile growing. And so we had a little bit of a tower garden. I know they're available everywhere. We had it against our white wall outside our house, and we grew incredible cucumbers and tomatoes, et cetera. And it wasn't a perennial food forest per se, but it was great. And even potted plants, spices are easy to grow. You barely need any sun or outside exposure. So everybody can grow something. And even if you can't do that, Ben, there's little sprouters where you can buy seeds and grow your own sprouts. I just think it's important for us to somewhat connect with our agrarian roots. It's how America started. It's how the world started. And there's just something satisfying about planting something, growing something, eating something. And I, as a kid from the suburbs, I never realized how much I would love this. And it really, you'd be so shocked at how excited I get when I find a certain seed that I can acquire of a species of plant that's medicinal or that's beneficial for the environment, or it's so much fun. And I'm somebody who really learned this as an adult. I was not taught this. I didn't go to school for this, but when you can't be a fan of herbs, spices, organic foods, etc., and not try to understand, in my mind, how to play a role in raising awareness, but also creating more supply of this food. I mean, so many of us depend on it, but we leave it all the growing and raising of these animals, we leave it all to a select few. And I just think there needs to be more. And your name's Greenfield. So, I mean, if my name was Greenfield, I would have been farming probably a lot longer.
Yeah, I know. I'm a first generation getting on it, but we're definitely expanding our permaculture operation up here. That this year we're introducing we don't really live in a forest where we've got much water, but we're introducing a natural body of water and bees this year. We've had a little bit of discussion about ducks. Haven't introduced those yet. We're doing sheep, goats, chickens. We got a fruit orchard. We have a lot of raised garden beds, and we've got about 7 acres. We haven't even barely tapped into yet. And even with that small amount of land that we're working on, we can bring boxes in the summer to our church full of produce that we can't even begin to consume ourselves as a family. Same thing with eggs. The goats, we're still working on our milking game with those, but it's crazy what we can do with just a little bit of property. It reminds me of my interview with Doug Wolcon of Kauai Organic Pharmacy. I visited him. Laird Hamilton introduced me to him when I was down there with Laird, and he's got 2 acres and is producing hundreds and hundreds of superfoods, tinctures, capsules, powders, oils, and it has a full operation down there on a couple of acres. And so there's so much that you can do with a pretty small footprint if you just kind of swallow the pill of taking responsibility. And, you know, as you've alluded to, especially during these times of COVID, if you just don't want to hassle with the grocery store, it's like that old Chinese proverb, you know, the best time to plant a tree is either, you know, 20 years ago or today. Right.
Yes.
So you can get started, you know, no matter, because I've had guilt complex before, like, why didn't I, when I first moved up here like 7 years ago, start things off just perfectly? But you do a little bit every year and the land just begins to transform. Now, I'd be remiss not to ask you a couple of questions, you know, related to the use of this food. Like we alluded to the Maker's Diet, for example. How do you personally eat? Like, what's your personal nutrition philosophy?
That's a great question. And it has, I would say, evolved a bit. What I can say, and I'm proud of this, if you read my first book, Patient Heal Thyself, which was written in 2002, or Maker's Diet, which I completed in 2003, my dietary philosophy is pretty much identical, although I've learned and expanded some of the sourcing, et cetera. But one thing that I do, if you look for 25 years, it's been pretty much daily, is I practice what is now called intermittent fasting. It wasn't called that at the time, but I really bought into the fact that we don't need to eat 3 square meals a day plus some snacks.
But it didn't work. It didn't work for you, obviously, until it actually got a name, because we all know it has to have a fancy name. You can't just say not eating.
Yes. So I don't eat breakfast. Maybe once or twice a month. But I eat what you'd call sort of a real food, a superfood diet. So when it comes to meat, it's something that we've raised. Or we've caught. So I ate a lot of venison this winter. I love water buffalo meat. I'll always try to, duck eggs are pretty much the only eggs that we have. When it comes to dairy, I already talked to you about some of the dairy that we like, but we'll do goat, sheep. We do have some cows, but they're A2 cows. We bred them specially for that. I love to make smoothies. I do a lot of different fruits. When I say I don't eat a lot of fruit, but I have a nice variety of fruits. I love salads. I love sprouts. I love consuming healthy oils on my salad. And if I do grains, I'll usually do sprouted, fermented. My favorite grain right now, I have this amazing einkorn sourdough bread. Einkorn is the sort of original biblical unhybridized wheat. and it's amazing. We have someone locally that makes that, and I purchase it from him.
That's what we used for the longest time was Einkorn, and we recently switched to Himalayan Tartary buckwheat, which I found through Dr. Jeffrey Bland. And it's got like 100 times the antioxidants. You usually find it like south of Chinda or China, and India in the southern Himalayas and like Pakistan. But if you've never looked into tartary buckwheat, I'm more impressed with that than with Einkorn in terms of the low amount of problematic, you know, large gluten-based proteins and the amount of antioxidants like rutin and quercetin and flavonoids. It's tough to get. I found one farm called Angelica Mills up in upper state New York that I get the flour and the bran from. But we're using that now instead of Einkorn for our bread. And that'd be one for you to look into if you're interested in some of these fringe grains.
Yes. Well, I'm from Jewish descent, and they have a buckwheat dish called kasha varnishkes. So there's got to be – if there's a good buckwheat, I need to check it out.
But did you just spit all over the microphone when you said that?
I moved my head.
Okay, good.
Just could avoid it. Yeah, I'm good with the chuz and the chaz. But, you know, see, that's the thing. If I find out about something like that, I'll latch on. When we learned about – black or purple rice, we were consuming some soaked and sprouted black rice or forbidden rice, as they call it. So I try to maximize every bite of food that I can. I do a lot of herbs and spices. I'm really big into consuming those. And we're working on some unique extraction methods for botanicals, consuming those. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say the best way to describe it is a real food diet. I'm crazy about avocados. We plant all of the avocado seeds from my house on the farm. And so I know we as a family use about 20 avocados a week, which is pretty awesome, right? I mean, that's amazing to know that. And it's so funny. I love seeds so much that when I went to a relative's house, we all ate avocados and they threw them in the garbage, and I pulled the seeds out. It's amazing when your perspective changes, what trash becomes treasure. You know, it's so funny to think about that. But I love avocado seeds because we're turning them into amazing avocado plants that we grow here indoors.
Interesting. And you know, I know a few people might note this and give you flack for it, but you talk about the original Garden of Eden and how we had access to all these perennial plants and wonderful fruits and vegetables. And I am of the belief that there was no death, there was no killing of animals, and there was no consumption of ribeye steaks, nor the necessity thereof in that scenario, not only due to, you know, differences in the atmospheric conditions pre-flood that allowed for much larger, more mineral dense, more nutritious produce, but also just the absence of the need for death and shedding of blood, et cetera. Yet it sounds like, despite you really appreciating that kind of ancient biblical based approach to diet, you have accepted the fact that meat is also now appropriate, even though perhaps that's not the way that the world was originally created, was to kill animals and eat their meat.
That's a great point, and I do agree. I think today, for me and most people that I've seen, because a lot of us who are in the health and wellness field have been on a plant-based diet or followed a vegan plan for a period of time. I know I did. My parents did. I don't feel strong constitutionally. I mean, if I could do a juice fast and I could look like a skeleton, and I can do a bone broth fast and look strong. I mean, I can't explain all the reasons why, Ben, but in today's environment, it rains, the sun shines hot, and it's very different than the Garden of Eden when, according to the Bible, there was a mist that watered the ground, and water came from the ground up. There had never been rain until the flood, if you believe the Bible as I do. So something changed. Noah, after the flood, began killing animals. Adam and Eve had animal skins even before that. And then what is called the Law of Moses specifically talks about what animals to eat and not to eat. Do I think you need 50% of your diet as animal-based? Probably not. But some of the healthiest people in the world subsist on meat and dairy. And so I think an omnivorous diet is best. But look, today you get a little bit of everything. There's a resurgence of the carnivore type diet. Obviously, plant-based is still big. I try to get the greatest nutrient density from foods that I can in a digestible form. And we're always trying to bring convenient solutions to people. I take a plethora of supplements, and a lot of them, they're really just food in a convenient form that gives me what I can't normally get. Certain Chinese and North American and Ayurvedic herbs, it's hard for us to grow or find. I mean, astragalus is not easily obtained from a health food store in its fresh form, right? And you can add so many others to that list. So I believe an omnivorous diet is the healthiest, but I think there's many ways to optimize the body in and around that. And I think you should consume the healthiest animal foods possible should you choose to do that, which I recommend.
Now, I agree with you. And I think that probably one thing that we should touch on here as we're getting close on time is resources for people who either want to, you know, follow more of the type of animals and plants that you're raising and what you're doing. I don't know if you're blogging or podcasting this process or anything like that, or the places or resources you would point people to learn more about how to do this on their own property, their patio, etc. Like, are there some directions that you would point people so that this isn't just like interesting information on a podcast for them about how to shave your yak, but also, you know, some things they can take away in terms of how they could get started on their own property or in their own home?
But I have to comment because I don't want you to hurt yourself. If you're going to shave yours or anyone's yak, Ben, you got the horns are sharp. So just remember, I don't believe in dehorning, but you may want to tip the horns because the yak shaving event could be more reminiscent of the running of the bulls, kind of like the running of the yak.
Well, my wife just waxes her yak.
All right, please don't send that in a text. I can't imagine what will come out of that one. So from a resource perspective, we are not blogging and making videos available in the volume that we will. So pretty soon, what Ben mentioned, our Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Sustainability, CFRAS for short, that is going to be something we're going to be communicating daily on. And I talked to Todd, who he and his 12 children operate our farm here. And everything he does is cool and amazing to most of us. It's his normal life. It's what he drinks in the morning. It's how he checks on the animals or the plants or what he's noticing in the yellowing of a leaf. So he's going to be creating copious amounts of content in the form of videos and blog posts, et cetera. So that will be coming soon. But I think from a gardening perspective, you just want to learn a little bit about the overarching message that Ben alluded to, permaculture. I would just do a search for permaculture. There are several organizations in the United States and globally that teach permaculture. At our farm in Missouri, we have held certified permaculture courses and certified people from all over the world. There's many of these around the country.
Yeah, but one thing that held me back from even like going to your farm, sorry to interrupt, it was aside from some time and calendaring issues, was I thought, why would I go take a permaculture course in a place where there's going to be different things to grow and different soil and different practices than I might experience in my own region? Wouldn't it be best to take a permaculture course in like where you live?
That's a great point. And I think every corner of America, I can even think off the top of my head, I know in the Northeast, I know in the Midwest, I know in the Pacific Northwest and California, there are permaculture courses. And some of the programs, some of the teachers will teach across the country. I think that's a great point, Ben, but I will argue that our permaculture courses, which are pretty standard curriculum for permaculture, you will be able to learn 75 to 90% of the material can work for you wherever you are, even if, as you mentioned before, you don't have a yard. Mm-hmm. Some of the, I would say, practices are universal, and also the understanding and the knowledge can be adapted to your region. But it's a great point. Look for the closest course you can go to, which makes sense anyway.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And then what's the best URL if people wanted to follow some of the stuff that you guys are doing?
In terms of our ancient nutrition, regenerative agriculture programs, et cetera, ancientnutrition.com. My business partner and buddy and your friend, Dr. Josh Axe, is draxe.com. That's AXE. We have got probably a few articles on permaculture and on regenerative agriculture. I think I did a couple of interviews that talks a little bit about what we're doing as an overview. And soon we're going to have our own, I'll call it microsite and channels regarding the Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Sustainability. And the other thing we're going to be doing, Ben, and I'd love to jump back on in the future and let you know, we do not want this to be our thing. I had this idea and I want you to tell me what you think of it. It's I just am in love with it. It's 2 days old. I was sitting on our farm yesterday with our team, and I said, I'm so passionate about seeds. What if we allowed our employees and even people outside our company, call it customers and friends, what if we had a program whereby people could save their seeds? Let's say you're eating cherries and you rinse the seeds off and we teach you how to dry them, or avocados or whatever it is, and you send them to us instead of throwing them away. And we create the garden of us. I mean, how cool is that? I keep saying it because I want my team to use the name, whether they like it or not. And I bring it up in every conversation in the last 2 days. So I wanted you to get my back on this one.
Interesting. The garden of us. That's a fantastic idea.
Think about it. We plant seeds that would have been in the trash can, and we could literally have this big map where we put sort of taxing, like everywhere in the country we'd be getting seeds from.
I like it. That's an interesting idea. Yeah, one that we should definitely unpack at some point in a future podcast, because we're almost out of time. But I am going to link to everything that we talked about at bengreenfieldfitness.com/JordanRubin, J-O-R-D-A-N, Rubin, bengreenfieldfitness.com/JordanRubin. Also, I remember the name of that that Colombian-style cloth-wrapped grilled beef tenderloin recipe. For those of you who want to look it up and start a fire in your own home, it's called Lomo al Trapo. Lomo al Trapo. And then that ice cream that we had was it was Guardian Angel. That was Andy's company. Angel. It was Guardian Angel. So if you guys want some goodies, you know, because it's tough to grow your own ice cream and grow your own Lomo al Trapo, but there are ways to.
In the summer, it's really hard.
Yeah, especially that. And as I just tweeted, sorbet is not ice cream, everybody. Just so you know, there are better non-dairy ways to consume good ice cream. Sorbet does not count, though. I don't know how people got so into sorbet being an alternative to ice cream, but we digress. So anyways, Jordan, this is just fascinating. You know, there were so many things I kind of wanted to talk to you about, and I knew that today's podcast would kind of be like getting people curious versus taking like the deep dive into, say, like, you know, the 1, 2, 3 steps for growing pawpaw. But I think this is going to be really interesting for people. And if you're listening in and you have comments, questions, feedback, your own tips to share, your own permaculture resources, stuff that you're curious about, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/JordanRubin, and I will link to everything that we discussed, including Jordan's books and some of the other fringe topics we delved into, like, you know, why cheese made with A2 milk is better, and, you know, Jordan's Heal the Planet Farm website, and a whole lot more. And of course, the Lomo al Trapo Colombian meat on the fire recipe. So, Jordan, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It's been fantastic to have a chat with you.
Thanks for highlighting some things that I rarely get to talk about in public. Very exciting for me.
Yes, sir. And next time I'm in Tennessee, which will be, I believe, this summer, I'm going to make a visit with my boys. We'll come over there and shave some yaks and milk some ducks with you.
I'll leave a little portion of our property. It'll be the Garden of Ben. How's that? Garden of Us, hashtag Garden of Ben.
I love it. All right, folks. Well, I'm Ben Greenfield along with Jordan Rubin, signing out from Team Yak at BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Have an amazing week.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.